Hi, welcome to Dyslexia Explored, where we hear different people's dyslexia stories, their journeys. And today I have got a young actor, 16 years old. He's done a number of films already in his career, and he's got a Netflix show that he's on called Diaries. And we're going to have a really interesting time listening to Liam Nicolosi. Liam, it is fantastic to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's great. It's really nice that you've even listened to some of the podcast episodes and so on. So you kind of know the format, don't you?
Yeah.
So I'm going to sort of go through the questions to find out about your dyslexia story. But why don't you tell people a little bit about where you're at right now? You're an actor. Yeah. You're acting on... You've got some shows and so on. So why don't you just tell the audience a little bit about what you're doing right now and what you've been doing, what's live?
All right. So now I'm in high school, the time where you have to put in the work in school and it's not just going to see your friends. And acting wise, yeah, I've had a lot of fun shooting this Netflix series very recently. And I just finished the second season of it. It just came out, actually. I finished shooting like before the summer and it came out a week ago. So it's pretty recent. And yeah, I'm having a lot of fun discovering like my passion with acting. And yeah, that's me.
Fantastic. I mean, I've looked at a few episodes in the show and I want to actually watch the series properly now. I'm looking forward to it. And so it's actually filmed in Italian, isn't it?
Yes. It's Italian, original language.
Yes. And Netflix do really well with dubbing these things and so on. So I really, you know, it took me a while to go, gosh, I think this is dubbed. And I go, gosh, what language is it? And then I remembered you're from Italy. So
really, for me, I can't stand dubbed things. I notice it immediately. Maybe it's because they dub it better in English. Here, when we get stuff dubbed in Italian, I can't watch it.
Have you seen the AI dubbing videos that they're doing now that are absolutely amazing?
Yeah, I've seen that. Like they managed to do the same voice. Yeah.
They changed the lips to actually match what the person's saying. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's also scary, I guess. And also with rights and stuff, it's really weird because as an actor, you're going to have your something you feel. It's not going to be that because you didn't do that. So we don't know that. That's a whole other road.
Yes, it is. Right. Well, let's start our conversation. You've got dyslexia then, do you?
Yes, I do.
And I'd like to hear your dyslexia story. And let's sort of wind things back to life before you realized you had dyslexia. So what was life like before you had dyslexia? And what woke you up to the fact that you had dyslexia?
All right. So I actually like got diagnosed pretty quickly. I think I got diagnosed in third grade, like right after third grade, year three, I think it was. And before, I mean, I was pretty small. I wasn't thinking that much about like school and academics. I do remember this teacher though, that when I was in year three, which I think is fourth grade because there's like different systems.
How old is that? Because in the UK, it's easier to just to say what age you were.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Third grade must be about eight or nine?
Yeah, around that time. Maybe a bit smaller, a bit older, around like, eight or nine. And I remember that if you didn't finish your work before break time, you had to stay in and do your work before going out to play with all your friends. And I remember most of the days, I didn't have a break time. And I remember saying, what am I doing? Cause I really wanted to go out and play. It was like one of the best times of my day, but I couldn't go out cause I was finishing. I knew how to do the work. It was pretty simple, but my friends finished. And then after 30 minutes, I was still there doing the work. And I was so like, I wouldn't say I didn't think I was stupid. I didn't understand. I was just really upset that I was like doing the work, but it would take me a long time. I didn't even realize that it was taking me a long time. I just wanted to go out and play. And then that summer after year three, I saw my aunt. She's like a special needs teacher, tutor. And she's dyslexic also. And so we were doing my math homework because she wanted to help me. And I didn't understand this problem. And so we did a couple exercises. And then she's like, wait a second. I think you're dyslexic. And I was like, what? What is that? And so she told my parents. And then as soon as I went back to school, we did an examination. I don't know how it's called exactly. But we had, like, I got diagnosed and I was dyslexic. That's when I realized. Then when they told me, you're dyslexic, I was like, all right, what's that? What does it mean? And it was also fairly new for my parents also, because I don't think they were, like, really informed, but they helped me a lot. They were like, yeah, it's just that you learn differently. Like, those are the things I remember. As soon as they told me I was dyslexic, they're like, yeah, it's fine. You just learn differently. And then continuing on the year, I was like, oh, I'm dyslexic. That means I'm stupid. What is this? Because I still couldn't finish my work. And then I saw this documentary. I don't remember his name now, but it was the guy that invented Segways. And he's dyslexic. And it talked all about how he saw the world. And I was watching it with my parents. I was like, what? That's how I see it. Like, he was talking about when I read a book, I was reading, like, really just learning how to read, like not learning how to read, but simple books. And every time I read something, I was like, okay, I read it, but what did it say? I don't remember what just happened. And then I remember him saying that and other stuff. And I was like, wait, that's the same as me. And I was like, all right. And then there I like accept that, all right, I'm dyslexic and it's not bad. I mean, if he didn't understand, I don't understand, but you can create a segue. I'd rather not be able to understand what I read and build a segue.
Yeah, fantastic. Yes, that's great. So it's fascinating that it's normally a person that wakes you up to that moment. And then you've also got another person's story that wakes you up to the upsides of being dyslexic, or that you can be really successful with dyslexia. And also be really successful because of your dyslexia sometimes. And in a way, you telling your story, you're trying to help other teenagers in a similar situation to you, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
So that's only been like you're 16 just now. You found out basically 6 to 7 years ago, 7 years ago.
Exactly.
Over the last 7 years, what would you say have been your main challenges because of dyslexia?
All right. So I actually think that my main challenges like started in middle school, because that's where the workload gets a bit heavier and it's more like real school than playing with your friends. And I actually went to school, which was very supportive, like that they were like, okay, use your computer. You have mind maps. You can read with the speech to text and text to speech. But I also found that challenging, because I went from using none of that to all of a sudden being overloaded with stuff that can be used as a tool. Yeah, it's very helpful. But if you don't know how to use it, it's like it can be overwhelming. And also I felt a bit like, wait, why doesn't this guy sitting next to me get a computer to do this? And then some of my friends, you know, it always happens, like even if they're really close friends, they don't mean to hurt you, but like, what? Why do you get a mind map? I would totally ace this test if I had a mind map. That's easy. And those are the things that, like, in that moment, I don't really get offended that easily. Like, I get offended, yeah, but I don't get offended in the moment. Like, I know that I get offended when I think about it later. In the moment, I'm like, oh, yeah, probably you'd ace the test. And then when I get home, I remember, oh, he told me that. Well, and then even I don't know, why didn't he get it? And why do I? Maybe. And yeah, that's my main challenges. And also, now that I went to high school, I went basically the opposite from having all those tools to now almost zero, because I'm already, the school was a bit slower on helping me than my previous school. And then now I'm also taking the IB, like I'm taking IB certificates, which is like, you know what it is?
International Baccalaureate?
Exactly. International Baccalaureate. And they have like, no, like they give me extra time, but I can't like use a mind map. I need a calculator to do like I don't need a calculator, but in the time I have, it makes it much faster. for me to do solutions, like also simple things, 26 divided by 3, I need the calculator to do it really quickly. If not, then I can still do it, but it'll take me a bit longer. And obviously, if I keep doing that, I'll get tired and then lose my train of thought, and that's a mess. So now I'm battling a lot in that, I think. A lot in not having things that I'm used to having.
See, yes. So right now, you're actually facing that challenge right now at school, because so you went from a high school that gave you lots of assistive technology, and now you're in a different high school.
No, I went from a middle school, and then when I switched to high school, it was different school.
I see, right. And when do you sit your exams?
Like when I take my exams?
Yeah.
Like the final ones are going to be next year, because now I'm a junior, so in 11th grade, and then in grade 12, which is next year, I take the final exams.
Excellent. Okay, got you.
But I think the thing that is the hardest for me, especially like with the IB and stuff, is that it's like going, okay, you have 100% support, so it's zero.
Yes.
It's not gradually taking stuff away. Like
yes.
One day, like it's like your mom feeds you every day, and then to one day to the next, you don't have anyone that feeds you anymore.
Yeah.
Like you can eat by yourself, but it's hard. Like all of a sudden you're like, oh, what's this? And then after a while, then you can eat by yourself.
Yes. I mean, the way I think of it, Liam, is that, you know, our minds are different shapes, like our feet are different shapes, you know?
Yeah.
And we get shoes to fit our feet, okay? And if you put a shoe on that's the wrong shape or size, and you're asked to walk on it, and it's the wrong size, you can do it for a little while when you're younger, maybe you can get away with it. But as you get older into high school, they say, right, I want you to run 6 miles or walk a long distance. And you're like, I don't know what's wrong with me, but you know, I think my feet are okay. I think my legs are strong, but something's going wrong. And someone comes along and goes, you've got the wrong size of shoes on your feet. And you put the right shoes on, the right tools, using the right tools for your brain, and then you can actually do the job. And so it sounds like you had some shoes that fitted, and now you don't have the shoes.
Exactly.
So what are you going to do about it, out of interest? What strategies are you doing at the moment?
At the moment, I'm just going along with it and trying my best, you know, it is what it is. Like the IB, it's not even my school. Like I can talk to anyone I want, but it's the whole IB, which is this huge system. And for now, it's really, they have no support. Like they have some support, but it's not helpful. Like that's why I think in the future, there have to be some changes. Like there are going to be many people that complain.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what's happening, you know, with the acting and so on. Tell us about the story with the acting. When did you start acting?
All right. So I started acting. Well, let's see. Both my parents are actors. And so I was born into this world. At the beginning, I was pretty small, so I didn't know if I liked it or not. But my parents had a YouTube channel, and we used to do like improvisations of random things that a family would do. But it was funny. It's called Two Kids and a Dog. If you want, you can go check it out.
Great. We'll put it in the show notes below. Just swipe up and you'll see the link.
Yeah. The old ones are really funny. And it was just this family doing ridiculous things. Like they end up in these weird situations. And their aim is like they have to do a weekly photo shoot. And it always happened like, and yeah, I was like really small, like 3, 4 there. So I didn't know what I was doing. I was just doing my thing. And there was a camera there. And so I think from there, I had it like implanted in my brain that was normal. So I just, I don't know, I had it. Yeah, I just knew what I was doing already. And then I like when I was a bit older and understood more of what was happening, I asked my parents, well, I want to try being an actor, because I know how hard it is. Like they kept telling me, yeah, you can try, but make sure you always have a plan B. You know, this is a really hard industry, because you can also be like the best actor in the world, but it depends if you're lucky or not. If you get the part or not, that doesn't depend on you. And yeah, I got into an agency, started to do some auditions, and I got lucky. And I got this part for this series, which was that aired on the BBC, and it was called Heirs of the Night. This one was in English, and it talked about vampires. It was this little show. It wasn't little. It was like this series, and I played a little vampire, and I had a lot of fun there. And actually, the director of the show was dyslexic. And so when I figured that out, I was like, oh, that's cool. I want to be a director one day. So that's very cool. And then after that, I realized that he wrote the screenplay. Like he adapted the book that it was based on into a screenplay. And then when I was like this, because I was in the point of like my life, I was like 10, 11 around, where I was like, okay, I'm dyslexic. I get it. So I can't write a book and I can't read a book. And then I met this other guy, and I didn't meet other dyslexic people. Like I had, but not a lot, and not like they told me. And once I knew that he wrote the whole screenplay, I was like, whoa, that's so cool. And I think that opened the mind, like, okay, well, I can do that then. And yeah, his name was, I have this written down because I really want to say it. It's this, Diedrich von Rusgen. I don't know how to say his last name well, but Diedrich. And he was like, he helped me a lot. And he was also a really cool guy when we were shooting the films.
Yes. Fantastic. Go Diedrich. Yeah. Shout out to Diedrich. This podcast is sponsored by DyslexiaProductivityCoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. How did things go for the show?
It actually went pretty well. It was supposed to air on regular TV in Norway. It did. Norway, Indonesia. It went really well in Indonesia, surprisingly. And then after that, it also aired on BBC during the time of Halloween. So that was pretty good. Then after that, continued doing auditions. And I got this other part, Diaries, which is in Italian. And it went on Netflix. And so that's the latest biggest thing I've done, I guess. And my character, Julius, his name, happens to be dyslexic also. And that's a pretty cool thing that I managed to get the part.
So did they know you were dyslexic when they cast you for the part?
Only at the end. Like I did 7 auditions for this series. And the last audition, it was a coincidence that they knew. They gave me the scenes to learn, like, five days before. There were 2 big scenes. And then we went there, and then they said, all right, well, can you do these 2 scenes? And there were 2 other complete different scenes. And so I saw them there, and I was like, oh, no. And then this image in my mind that I was dyslexic, so I couldn't read things and learn them fast. And so I was like, no way I can do this. And then my mom went to talk to them, saying, look, he's dyslexic. Why? This is really hard for me. So in the end, they made me do the ones before, and then they cast me.
Fantastic. But
now, something I realized, that's actually, I don't know what I was doing before. It was just all mentality before about my lines. Now, I think maybe also because of my dyslexia, I just see the lines. I don't even have to read them. And I learn them really quickly now. I just have to breeze over them, and I create, like, I don't say it back word for word. I create my little things, say it in my way, say it how I think the character would say it. And I do that really fast now. Like before, when in my mind I thought I could never learn a scene quickly, it would take me so long. I would be really desperate sometimes, really sad, because I would read everything and it would be hard for me to read. So I was like, what if I can't read it? How am I going to learn it? And it took me like a really long time to learn scenes. But then as I kept getting parts, I had to learn scenes pretty quick. And I just forgot about that mentality. And I'm really fast at learning them. So I don't know why I was saying that. Like now that I think about it, if now I was back then when I was in the audition, I would have totally learned the lines there. And I would have never said, oh, it's because I'm dyslexic that I can't do it. It actually, maybe it helps me learn the lines.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So why don't we dig a little bit deeper into that? That'd be just, maybe we can learn something from that, you know? So What I'm hearing from you, Liam, is that there's two ways to learn lines. Way number one is word for word exactly. So like the literal learning of the lines. And then the other way is getting the heart of the lines, yeah, the spirit like the of context. The lines. Yeah. So why don't you go through your process a little bit? Give us an idea of how it works.
Yeah. Okay. So my process of learning lines, basically, this was when I was shooting every day. So I finished filming, then I had to learn the lines for the next day. Then I repeated this process all the time. So what I would do is after I finished filming, I was exhausted of like 8 hours a day. So I went, if it was in the hotel, if you're shooting on location, or if we're in Rome, I went to my house. Then I usually had a shower, a bath to relax. Then I looked at the lines for the other day and just looked at them, read through them slightly just to understand what's happening. Then I would actually not look at them and then just like try them myself. Like, I don't know, look in the mirror, like stare at a wall and try the scene and just see what came up. Then that night I would read them and make sure that what I'm saying actually is okay in the scene and I'm not saying other stuff. And then If I say what I want to say the next day, right before going to bed, as soon as I wake up, I remember it even better. I don't know what it is. It's like if my brain works overnight. This is a trick my mom taught me, actually. And yeah, that's what I do. I just say the lines before going to bed, and it's as if I've been repeating my lines like for the whole time I've been sleeping. So it's pretty cool. Everyone should try it. Like, it's actually really surprising. I don't know if it works for everyone, but for me, it's really shocking. Like, one time I barely knew my lines, then I read them, then the next morning, bam, I knew them.
Absolutely, Liam. It works for everyone. And it's a brilliant technique. And a lot of people, when they're doing studying or learning of other kinds, they use that technique. And it's interesting because I did this. I teach people how to mind map, okay, as my day job. And I was teaching this teenager how to draw a mind map of their physics homework, okay, for an exam, for a test. And they drew out the mind map. And one of the tests I give them, techniques, is I tell them to turn their original mind map over, their notes as a map, over and not look at them, and then draw a mind map really fast from scratch. Not pretty, but just a quick sketch here that reminds them of that bit on the original map and another bit here, another bit there, another bit there. And they do it in less than 3 minutes. We call it a flash map. And then what we do is we flip both over and we mark it. Okay. What did you get right? What did you forget? X, tick, tick, tick. And maybe get 16 out of 30. Okay. You do it again. And maybe get 22 out of 30. Okay. Now this evening, the girl did, her name's Annie. She won't mind me telling you this. She got 22 out of 30. Okay. And then the next day when I met her, I said, right, Annie, before we do anything else, do a flash map right now, 3 minutes. She hadn't looked at it for 24 hours. Okay. She did a flash map. What did she get? 24 out of 30.
Yeah, because your brain, like the back of your brain, keeps thinking about it.
Yeah. And I think also in your sleep, your brain kind of sorts through things and files things and reorders things.
Yeah.
And brings the right things together a bit. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That'll help lots of the young people who are listening right now, even if you're not learning your lines. What I also quite liked about your technique, looking at it as a teacher and myself, is first of all, you read through the scene, and then what you did was you tried to talk through the scene in your own words.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing there is you're kind of forcing your brain to create the pictures of the scene.
Exactly.
Is that what's happening in your head? You're kind of imagining, that's what's happening. That, tell us a little bit more what's going on in your head when you're kind of rebuilding the scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's really important because when you're going into a scene, especially if you're like, it's a bit hard for you to read it and understand when you're reading it, is to understand the key points and then create an image in your mind so you know exactly what's happening. You have to know what's going to happen later and what you just did. So you know how to act. Like maybe it can be a scene where you're having the best time with your friends and it says that's what's written. And you're like, yo, how's it going? But the scene before, your mom died. So you can still do that scene, but it changes completely. Like you're going to be like, hey, and then like, I don't know, look, like when they're not looking, have a moment of, you get it. That's what I think. That's why that bit's important. And it's also important to know what's happening. Even if before it's still, you're having a good time now. And also in the scene, you're having a good time. It's still important to know, okay, this friend is there. Then you're talking to this guy and your aim is to do this. Because if not, you're just memorizing something and saying it again. And then anyone could do it.
Yes. Now, here is where I'm interested. I think there's probably some dyslexic traits that are advantages in learning the lines at this particular point, okay? Because a lot of people with dyslexia have a really good visual spatial awareness. And what your language is very visual spatial right now. So why don't you tell me more about this whole visual spatial thing that you've got on? Can you visualize the movement of things? Do you imagine it in three dimensions? Give us an insight into your imagination.
That's actually exactly how I imagine. Like when I say I look at the wall and I look at a mirror, I look at a mirror to see like how people would look at me. And I also imagine it 3D. And it's not necessarily how the director is going to want it, but at least if I have a picture in my head, I can do it better. And this is really important in auditions, because when you're actually acting in a series or a film, everything is actually happening. Except if there's a green screen or something. But I actually see, like when I'm looking at a wall, I see the person like right in front of me and I see them there and I imagine them doing what they're doing. If I have to go up to someone and then I'm going and then, no, I'm actually scared. No, I'm not going to go. I imagine them like looking away, writing something that will help me. Like, because obviously if you're just saying during the lines that this is not even lines anymore, this is just a movement that you're like, no. It's imagining like that person. If you just read, okay, I don't know, Liam looks and the person then decides not to speak to them. It could be anything. Like there could literally be a person staring at you and you just turn around. It's all like a thing of actually seeing. And I actually see the scene in my mind. Like,
that's fantastic. And do you know what, Liam? You probably think everyone else sees it the same way. And that's the interesting thing is that do you see their faces and do you see color when you imagine them?
Yeah, of course.
Well, there's no of course, because I don't.
Oh.
I'm dyslexic, but I don't see faces and I don't see their color. But my brain works more like when I imagine something, I see it more like night vision goggles. You know, you see the outline shape of a person. You know who they are, outline. It's kind of like a three-dimensional shape, but there isn't. I know the person. I know how they're moving. I know their location. And I'm thinking about who they are and what they are, but I don't necessarily see the visual color outside. I don't know if you've ever heard of this book called The Dyslexic Advantage.
No, I've never seen it.
It's a really clever book. And I've had the authors on the podcast. I highly recommend you read it. You listen to the podcast, they summarize it really well. Dr. Brock and Fernet ID. It's probably one of the best books on dyslexia in the world, you know. But what they say is they've identified through their research that there are four main strengths that people with dyslexia often have. And you've just demonstrated two of them. Okay. So one of them is dynamic reasoning. Okay. Okay. They call them mind strengths. M, material reasoning. I can't remember what I is. But one of them, material reasoning, and one of them is dynamic reasoning. And another one is the sort of storytelling reasoning. So a lot of people with dyslexia can dynamically figure out what's probably going to happen. So what you're doing there is when you're imagining the scene, you're probably thinking, oh, the director is probably going to get people to come this way, and this is probably going to happen, and that's probably going to happen, and I'm probably going to have to say this at one point. And you're kind of probability dynamically reasoning what's going to happen within that scene without actually knowing what the director is going to do. You're kind of projecting it. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. And then, I also have this thing where, like, you asked me if I see them in color, if I see their face. And it actually depends, not like my mood, but my brain. Sometimes, like, I can decide if I have someone in front of me to look at. And sometimes I see them and then, like, they go away and stuff. But it's like, I have to, like, try, or, like, even a thought in my mind. I'm, like, trying to see a picture and it, like, sort of goes away. Or sometimes it's as if, like, it's being sketched right in front of me, like, as if they're being drawn. But most of the times when I'm, like, really in the zone, it's, like, really clear.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, that's a strength of, often a strength of dyslexia. Not everybody with dyslexia has that strength, because, like, these mind strengths, there are four different strengths: material reasoning, intuitive reasoning, dynamic reasoning. Each one of the strengths has a trade-off. Okay, so what that means is that you have a strength in one area and you're really strong in that area, there's a price to pay, you know? And so you can be really strong with this kind of automatically visualizing and dynamic relationships, but then weak in the figuring out, you know, the relationships between words and text and so on, because that part of your brain has been allocated to another part. And so it's not that you can't do it. It's just that you've been sort of optimized for a certain kind of thinking. So that's fascinating that you're using that ability to actually reading lines, going from, oh, that's really hard because I have dyslexia, to now actually you're finding it really easy, probably because you have dyslexia and you're using this process.
Yeah. And now is the first time I just learned that you say that not everyone can actually think that way. Like, I just took that for granted. I think, like, I'm curious now, like, maybe there's some things that for me are normal but for other people aren't. Yeah.
Guaranteed, Liam, you are going to find throughout your life that you will think to yourself, well, doesn't everyone think like this? Doesn't everyone understand like this?
Yeah.
And they'll go, no. Like, I've just done. Now.
I just had one of those moments then.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it happens in all sorts of ways. Like, you know, for example, my wife, now that I'm 53 years old and I've known my wife for 30 years plus, we went to university at the same time and we studied a subject when we were adults. And she was doing exactly the same subject. We were both sitting beside each other, listening to the same lecture, and we did things so differently. Like when she heard the lecture, I would afterwards go, I want to talk about it. Let's chat about it. And she's like, no, I can't talk about it. I can't talk about it. And I'm like, why can't you talk about it? She's like, because I've got to process it. I don't get it yet. I don't get it yet. I've got to process it. Where I'm sitting there going, oh yeah, I got it. That's really fascinating. I'm with it. I'm mind mapping it out. I've got it all mapped out and I'm ready to chat to someone about it. And she's like, no, no, you can't talk to me. And I'm like, what's happened, you know? And then, and so I found it really easy to immediately, like, you know how after someone shares a talk or something, you say, get in a group and talk it through. I'm really ready to talk it through. Whereas my wife is like, no, I've got to really think about this for 3 days, you know?
That's cool.
And her brain thinks completely differently. So she found that hard. But then there's another time where she's been thinking about something for like a month and she's been thinking about writing an essay or something like that. And she says, right, I'm going to sit down and write my essay. And I'm like, all right, are you going to do an outline or something? Like, what's your outline and so on? And she's like, nope. I'm like, you can just sit down and write an essay straight out your head? And she's like, yeah, can't you? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, I would have to write down all sorts of things and try and figure out the order of it. And my crazy ideas are all over the place and I have to reorganize them. And she's like, no, I think in my head and I've got a list in my head and I can see it in my mind. There's these words here and then there's a heading there and then there's this and then there's that. And I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah. It's just like that. I've got it in my head. And I've got a point that from 4 days ago, I put it here and I know that's going to go there. And I've just been sorting out in my head and I'm ready to write it all out right now. And I'm like, I can't believe it. That's amazing.
Yeah. And that's actually a problem I'm having is that now we have like in English, you have an hour and 30 minutes. And they're like, they give you a prompt. All right, go write an essay.
Oh, I know. It's really hard with dyslexia, isn't it?
That's so hard for me.
Shall I teach you a quick hack that will nail that? Yeah, of
course. Definitely.
Yeah, okay. So as an actor, you will understand this hack, okay? Right. It is called the story star. I made this up, okay? So every story in the world pretty much follows these five steps, okay? And so when your teacher says, I want you to write a story, like a creative writing story, okay? Right. What the teacher wants is you to write a good beginning, middle, and an end, okay? And the problem with dyslexia is we often start with a good beginning, and then it becomes a middle, a middle, a middle, a middle, and it never ends. Because you're like, oh, there's this. Oh, and there could be that. Oh, and there could be this. You get, is that you?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so if that's you, here is the solution. Okay. The story star. So I would draw it, but I'll draw it in the air since you've got a strong imagination. So you've got a five pointed star. Okay. Right. At the top, you've got a face. Okay. A smiley face, like an emoji. Right. Yeah. And in the face stands for the characters. What are the characters in the story? Two or three characters. Introduce the characters, okay? Then the second star, the branch, is eyes, two eyes, okay? Because every hero in the story wants something. They've got their eye on something. They want to fall in love. They want to get rich. They want to get vengeance. What's their eye on? They want something, okay? And that's the trick, okay? Because they want something, but then the foot comes and trips them up. That's the third thing, the foot. Yeah. The face, the eye, the foot, okay, is the third branch.
Yeah.
And the foot trips them up and they fall flat on their face and it feels like they're never going to get to what they've got their eye on, okay? Mm-hmm. Then the fourth branch is a hand comes out in the fourth branch and the hand is the hand of a guide like Yoda or some magic wand or Gandalf or something that really helps you, someone or something that is a real helping hand, lifts you up, sets you back on your path, and sets you towards what you've got your eye on. And then with that thing, that solution, you go through your journey and then to the final end, the fifth thing, the crown. You get to the crown, you get to the end, and the story is finished. And why do you know the story is finished? Because the character gets what they had their eye on or something like it. They wanted to fall in love with that girl, but they didn't fall in love with that girl. They fell in love with maybe a less popular girl, but she was more fantastic. But the core thing was he wants to fall in love or they wanted to find friendship or be successful. And normally it's different from what they had their eye on, but it's still what their heart had their eye on. And if you do those five things, you can get the story done. Like,
that's actually, I have one time where I was in middle school and I was so excited because I wrote this. We had this, it was in Italian and it's called scrittura libera, which means free writing. And it wasn't a class, but the teacher said, all right, you have free writing for this lesson. And so I was like, first I was scared. I was like, all right, well, what do I do? And then my brain just clicked. And like, I wrote a story about like this whole other planet and it was so cool. There were like forests with giant mushrooms and everything. And then when I was so excited, okay, can you read this? And you couldn't understand anything because there were so many ideas crammed together. It was like, okay, giant mushrooms, and all of a sudden this thing comes out of the bushes. And if I spaced it out, it would have been like a really good, an award-winning screenplay, but it ended up being a bit too much. And I was so proud of that. Like I remember when I was writing this, so cool. How did I come up with this monster? I described it so well. I can totally imagine it. And then, but that was funny. And they never finished. They just like, I couldn't finish it because there were just things I had to write, like what the monster did after. But, and then like I switched main characters, like, all right, the main character goes to fight the monster. And then I started speaking about like the monster, how it eats breakfast.
That's right. And that is so, so the mind of a person with dyslexia, because you see, often with dyslexia, you're kind of seeing the big picture all the time. You know, it's like a wide angle camera. It's like a typical thinker has a normal angled camera, and then other people have a zoom camera, so they're really detailed orientated. And then other people have like this fish eye wide angled camera of a mind, and that's dyslexia.
Yeah.
And you're actually, in the way that you're remembering your lines, doing that wide angled camera thing as well, because you're not just thinking about your lines. You're thinking about, I'm guessing. Okay, I'm going to guess. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. But you're reading through your lines, but you're also thinking, all right, then they're probably going to be doing this, and they're probably going to be doing that. And
I'll tell you something.
Wider than yourself.
Exactly. I'll tell you, that's actually something that I just noticed now, but I do this, and it's probably pretty weird. When I close my eyes and think, I don't see what I see. I see myself and other people as if there's a bird's, like someone else is looking at me. And that's, I think that's pretty cool. Like, that's where I understand how everything, because I'm not looking at me, I'm looking at the scene. And then I am that component of the scene.
So you're actually thinking like a director.
I guess. Yeah, exactly.
You're not thinking.
I guess I have to become a director then.
You have to become a director, Liam. Absolutely. Because you're already thinking like a director. Do you know Steven Spielberg is dyslexic?
Really? I know him. I didn't know he was dyslexic.
Yeah. Now, do you know how Steven Spielberg found out he was dyslexic?
No.
He was about 44 years old, thereabouts, and his son got identified with dyslexia like you.
Yeah.
And the assessor said, well, would you like to get an assessment done? Because it normally goes to the family. He's like, I got the assessment done. He's like, oh my goodness, I'm dyslexic. That made sense. And you can totally see it in the way he does stuff.
That's actually true.
So off the wall and so creative and unusual, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs was dyslexic.
Yeah, I knew that.
And Johnny Ives, the guy who actually designed the iPad and the iPhone and so on that Steve Jobs selected, very famous British person, designer with dyslexia. And you just follow the trail of people that have made amazing things. Dyslexia makes amazing things.
I guess like if everyone had that thinking box, then there would be things that would be created, but not like the iPad. But I'm saying that if everyone had the fisheye view, then it wouldn't work. If everyone had the normal box, it wouldn't work. If everyone had the focus, it wouldn't work. You need everything to work together.
Yes.
Because I don't know, the guy that thought about the iPad was like, oh, we need this thing that's going to be a giant screen. You can write on it, everything. And then there was a guy that was super focused, and he knew how to, oh, I'm really good with the screen. I'm definitely going to make the screen and the hardware of this. And then the normal thinker was just like, oh, well, we're going to sell this. Let's sell this and make it a world thing. And then you're like, bam, iPad.
Absolutely. And that's exactly, we all need the three different types of thinking and three different sort of wide, medium, focused. And sometimes we need to learn to do it ourselves. You know, sometimes we are naturally wide, but sometimes we have to kind of get really close and go, right, I'm wide angled, but I'm trying to zoom in here and go close. And in a way, it's like that with reading sometimes. You know, you're kind of like, oh, I can't quite read it, you know, but you have to go really close, you know. And it's like in our minds, sometimes we need to try and go from wide angle to medium to focused. You're in that situation right now where actually school is asking you to be highly, highly focused, highly, highly zoomed in, high detail, whereas your natural space is to have this bird's eye view, see the dynamic flow of what's going on, figure out what your best contribution is and things like that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So what I always ask people, the fourth question, you know, what do you think your challenge, what reward have you got from that challenge? And you're still very young, but, you know, what rewards have you got so far?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that I'm so young and I'm still working to get that reward, and I have things in mind, and hopefully it's very big reward and it's what I want to do, because I want to become a director, and I like that would be that's like acting and directing. I think I would do both, and that's like I hope I'm gonna get that. But now I've actually had a lot of rewards. Let's just say like me working hard on that line thing and trying to think about stuff has helped me realize that I think like that. And I just like thought about this short film that I've shot. Actually, I'm editing it right now. I shot it with my friends. I'm gonna post it on TikTok and on my social media. Maybe when it's out, I'll let you know.
We'll just say link in the show notes below. We'll make sure it's in the link in the show notes. When it comes out, we'll update it, okay?
All right. And yeah, it's this really simple idea. I was just listening to the Barbie song one night, and I was like, well, this would be actually really good as a long TikTok short film and make this guy feel rejected like everyone else so everyone can relate to that. And then at the end, well, I won't spoil it, but Yeah. I was just listening to the song and now I wrote like a sort of a film to the song.
Fantastic. Great. Great. Well, Liam, I think you've, even just listening to you in the last short while, you know, you've definitely got the mind that thinks like a director, you know, even that the way you're describing learning your lines, you're learning them as if you were the director, not just as the actor.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that works. That would be, I think I would have a lot of fun as a director.
What would you, out of interest, what would you dream about directing and making? What if you were
I would dream of writing my own thing, starring in it and directing it. I think that's my dream. It's like at the end of the movie, written, directed, and starred by Liam Nicolosi. That's like my dream come true. And I think now I still have the mentality where I think it's really hard for me to write it, but hopefully I can get over this hump I have. Because even if you know that loads of other dyslexic people wrote stuff and it's not because of that, it's just harder for you to grasp it. It's still like something that it actually is hard for you. So every time like I go, like for example, what I wrote, I just wrote something for my short film. I just wrote it like something that I can understand. Like if I give that script to one of my friends, they'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is cool. But they don't understand everything I mean. Because it's written like in sort of my dialect that I understand for me. And I'm sure that I'm going to be able to write, and I don't know, maybe I can partner with someone that can help me with my ideas and not get them too wild, but yeah.
Yes. I'll tell you a story. There's this 12-year-old girl in Ireland called Evie Martin, okay? And she's won a few local awards for her writing, and she's got dyslexia, and she wrote this little book called The Little Fish in the Garden of Love when she was 10. While doing one of my little workshops, I did a workshop on how to write a story using a mind map. And what was fascinating was she wrote it and she did the pictures and so on. What was fascinating when I asked her what was the difference between doing a mind map and just doing it her previous way was that it was all about deleting as much stuff as possible so you got to the essence of the story. And she, and it's like editing. Have you noticed that with editing a video? You're deleting this, you're deleting that, you're deleting this. Yeah. But actually, the story gets stronger and stronger the more you delete it.
Exactly.
And that's the key with dyslexia, is learning how to delete things. So finding a way to stick down all of your ideas in one place so you can see everything big picture all at once, but then having the confidence to say, right, I'm deleting that, I'm cutting that out, cutting that out, cutting that out, until it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And then you've got the gold, you've kind of sifted it through and washed out all the junk, and you end up with the gold. That, in essence, is writing. And a lot of people with dyslexia, because they've had to find a specific process to do that, they're not just automatic at it, because they've had to be intentional, they actually get much better at it than others.
Yeah, I get it. Because they don't do it by accident, or like they don't do it naturally. They know what they're doing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Well, yeah, I have to develop that better then.
Yes, I know that you're going to find, we're going to watch this video back in 10, 15 years time, and you're going to say, I wished, and we'll be able to take that out and do the Liam Nicolosi afterwards, before and afterwards. And when Liam was 16-year-old, he made this wish, and this is it coming true.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, it's one thing hoping to write and direct and star in your own show. What would it be about? What sort of things are you really interested in?
Well, I like comedy a lot, and I like sci-fi things that when you see it, you're like, what? That's so cool. How did I not think about that? I like that a lot, because I think that if I like already, I can imagine pretty cool things. And if I try really hard, I can think about pretty cool, not just like stories, like I can imagine pretty cool worlds, like in whole ecosystems on how they work and stuff. And then once I know that, I can go and write something about that as if I was in it. Like, I'll give you an example so you better understand what I'm saying. Like in my mind, imagine like just creating a planet, like you creating a planet, and then, all right, this is what happens. Maybe it's a normal story. Nothing magical is happening. So I just create this planet, and in my mind, I go there. Okay, look, I turn the planet around where I can see, oh, look, this is cool. I zoom in. Okay, get this character, move it around like a puppet. And that, I create like this whole thing that's happening, actually happening. And then from there, I get the camera. All right, let's go in this part of the world. And it's like the world I created. Let's start filming. And then by putting the camera where I want to look, I can already start imagining what's happening. I don't know if you understood it. It's a bit.
Yeah, I understand it. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know, for example, if I'm going to try writing this, a relatively normal movie, let's just say this guy falls in love and everything, I would already in my mind create where he is, like create his life already. So let's say, okay, I want him to live in a place like New York. Okay, so skyscraper is already built. I can imagine that. I don't know. I want him to I want it to be in the future. Okay, skyscraper is built. I just changed their color, changed their material. Now they look really futuristic. I get some cars flying around. I can already imagine a mutated bird going from branch to branch, this rat goes out of the garbage. I already imagine the first scene. Bam, he's walking on the alleyway. That's the first scene. And I just created that like that.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, that's like my sort of way of thinking about it.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your character in the story. He's got dyslexia. We kind of went off the track there a little bit. And we'll come back onto our, this is such a dyslexic conversation, isn't it? We're just all over the place. But there is a path. There is a path. And we'll come back on the path. And the path is your character.
Is dyslexic.
Is dyslexic, and you're dyslexic. So why don't we talk about your character's dyslexia in the show? Is it obvious in the show, or is it just a backstory dyslexia? Yeah.
All right. So as I was saying, I was going to say this before, but we went in the dyslexic route. And in the show, it talks about eight main characters, and we all have an obstacle, an issue happening in her life. So, for example, there's one who has problems with girls and his parents are getting divorced. So people can relate to that. Then there's another guy that doesn't know if he likes men or if he likes women. And then there's this girl that wants to have her first kiss, but doesn't know how. And then there's me, and I'm having trouble at school. And it turns out I'm dyslexic. So it's really cool that it can help everyone. Like the series, anyone can relate to it. Like that whole middle school section can relate to each character. Like, I don't know, there's this, maybe there's a kid that's having some trouble in school and they see this show and they, oh, look, also this guy's having trouble at school. Then they keep watching it and turns out I'm dyslexic. And they're like, oh, wait, maybe I could be dyslexic, maybe. And they can look at any character and connect with them. My dyslexia is sort of the main thing of my character. Like, I'm having fun with my friends, but I'm always having trouble at school and I don't know what's happening. I'm always like, yeah, all right, I'm studying. But like at first, my character just pretends, always the class clown, doesn't study. It's fine. He's not getting good grades because of that. But he's actually pretending. He is a class clown, but he is studying. And I might get confused with the first and second. Because
you better be careful with spoilers.
yeah, exactly. Because so in the first, which is out and I can say stuff, is that he is struggling and his friends want him to come in the class next year with him. Because in Italy, we have this thing that you can be taken away from the class and redo the class again if you fail. I probably, it's also in other schools.
No, not in the UK.
All right.
Rarely in the UK do you ever get held back.
No, here you actually get held back quite, like, if you fail, like, you get held back.
Wow.
Yeah. So my friends don't want me to get held back. So me too, I don't want to get held back. So I study and everything. And then there's a test and I still don't perform. And I don't understand. I'm like, what? I studied so much. And then the teacher says to another of the main characters, which is like the class perfect one. Like she always gets A's and always studies. And so she helps me study. And then when I'm studying, I'm like, hell, I don't understand. And I leave. And then I leave my notebook there. Like this is the scene. And she's like, looks at it. And she's like, what? And she thinks, oh, wait, he could be dyslexic because her cousin is dyslexic. And so she goes on, and when I'm doing this other test, which is called, it's an oral, they're called the interrogazioni in Italian, where you basically go up in front of the whole class and talk to your teacher, and she asks you questions, and I don't remember this question. And she, in the middle of the lesson, tells the teacher, yeah, but he tried, he did study, he's dyslexic. And then as soon as she says dyslexic, I'm like, what? What's that? Because my character doesn't know what it is. And basically, I get angry at her and rush out of the classroom because I basically just think she's saying that I'm stupid. And then I go to the people that diagnose me and they try helping me better. And by the end, I understand and I get a good grade in a test.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Wow. That is brilliant. I mean, we've got used to having different sexualities represented in film and programs and so on, but
yeah, that's why
to actually
this is
have
cool.
Dyslexia represented so clearly in a show is fantastic as a different obstacle, considering that 10% of the world's population has got dyslexia at the very least, and they don't know it. It's really good to have some representation in that way.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that here in Italy, at least, because it went really well the first season. Like most of the kids in Italy, all of them watched it. So I'm pretty sure it helped out some kids, I'm assuming.
Yeah. 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 I'm hoping this podcast that, you know, people will share this with other teenagers out there, your own teenagers, if you're a parent listening, you know, maybe you send this to someone and say, hey, look, this famous teenage actor is telling his story about dyslexia. This might help your child. Thank you very much for sharing your story. One of the questions I tend to ask people is, what sort of tools do you find that you use that help with what are in your toolbox? You mentioned mind mapping. How much have you used mind mapping?
I use mind mapping really not that much. I've never been taught like the right way to use them. I've just been in middle school. I was allowed to use them during tests and everything. And they
How
just
did
said,
you use them in a test? Did you print one out and you have one beside you and you could use it as a prompt?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then now I just, like when I, as soon as I went to high school, I sort of lost using them because I wasn't allowed to use them, obviously, during the test. And so I wasn't really, I was just allowed to use them. I was never taught on what they were. I just...
Yes. Yeah. So it's like, did you do it on a computer or did you do it by hand?
Both. It was a mix.
Okay. Because one of the things that, you know, after this, at some point, I'd like to teach you how to do this, Liam. I think it will help you.
Yeah, we'll would.
How about we do the story star together and we take a story and in 45 minutes under tight, like test conditions, I can show you how to quickly write a story, write it out and then have it done. And then that's it.
Yeah.
Who knows? You might end up writing your screenplay that way with the story star.
Or maybe that one there, I end up, like I come, oh wait, where did I write this? And then I find it in my files. That story's pretty good. Let's get them to produce it.
I often teach mind mapping in a group and the parents are there as well. And one of the parents was a script writer for the BBC. And he had been walking around with this story in his brain for about 3 years and he hadn't got it out yet. And he thought to himself, I'll just do what Darius taught with the mind map. And he just wrote out the structure of his screenplay in an evening, you know, doing it as a mind map because it was easier and faster to do and you didn't get distracted by typing it. So I'd love to show you how to do that. Do you know what? One of the things that you could learn how to do, Liam, is when I did my law degree at Edinburgh University, I found it really hard until the third year when I learned how to mind map. And my technique was to practice drawing a mind map from memory, okay, of just like the main 50 things or 60 things that I would need to remember, like doodles and pictures, and I could remember where they laid out and so on. And then when I went into the exam, I would ask for an extra bit of paper. And when they said, it's time, I didn't even look at the paper. I took the blank sheet and I wrote out my mind map from memory quickly and put it to the side. And then I could concentrate on it before they all disappeared. And I had my answers with me. And everyone is allowed to do that.
That's good. That's it. Yeah, that, you know, I actually did that in my physics test the other day.
Oh, really?
I had my mind map ready. And then I remembered, I can use these. And so I went right before the test, looked at all like the formulas I had written. And then as soon as it started on the side of the test, I wrote all the formulas and then I used them during the test.
That's definitely the best way. Do it every single time. Don't even look at the questions and just get it all out. You're allowed to do that. Except if you've got if you're doing a medical exam in the UK now, they've realized it gives you such a big advantage if you write it down straight away from memory before you at the beginning of the exam. They don't actually allow you to do that because they know it's so effective.
Yeah, but that's still a way. You can still do that.
Yeah, it's a great hack. And knowing you, Liam, you wouldn't need to write it down. You would end up kind of looking at the wall and you would see the diagram of it. Like you would probably, the way that I would teach you how to mind map is you would draw a mind map, right, of the subject. And then I would tell you, right, I want you to step away from the mind map, put the piece of paper down and imagine it in three dimensions in a big space.
That's pretty cool.
And create this world of the map. And then you can just see that map in three dimensions.
Yeah. Yeah, that is actually really good. Like a massive futuristic iPad screen where I move everything.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Like we still haven't invented that, but I can do that.
Well, we'll have the Apple Vision Pro coming soon, where you can put it on and you'll be able to see your whole map.
That That's basically, I have the Apple Vision Pro built in already.
Yes, that's right. That's true. Yeah.
Who knows? Probably maybe one of the creators and one of the people that had the idea of that is dyslexic, maybe. We don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the statistics are on the right side of it. If one in 10 people are dyslexic, of course. If there's a team of 10 people, one of them is dyslexic. And in the creative arts and technology, it's normally more like 30% or 40% are dyslexic. If you ask other actors, okay, I bet you if you got 20 actors, okay,
yeah,
on scene, I wonder how many actors are on scene with you in the show.
Like, it depends on the scene, but like our 8 main characters that most of the time were together.
Okay. Well, let's say there was 20 altogether, okay? Statistically, mm-hmm. out of the 20, there will be 2 that have got dyslexia, okay? You and someone else. But I bet you, if you ask them all, there's probably 20 to 30% of them, 6 of them have got dyslexia. And some of them won't know
they're it. They're good in that. Like,
some of them won't know it.
Probably, yeah.
Well, I wonder how many people on set, since you were acting and discussing dyslexia in the show, did you have discussions about dyslexia with fellow actors and cast members and so on?
No, actually, no.
Oh, that's interesting. Why not?
I'm not sure. I guess it didn't. Well, I don't know. It's actually pretty interesting. I don't know.
Okay, so the screenwriter of this show, do they have a relationship to dyslexia? Are they dyslexic or do they have family members with dyslexia? Why did they write it in? What's the story behind that?
I think they wrote it in because they wanted to get all these obstacles out, and they thought that it was a good, because they talked about many, many things, and I think that dyslexia was one.
Tell me if this is a good characterization or not. But I haven't watched your show. I'm going to watch it, okay? But shoot me down if this is wrong. But it sounds a bit like Sex Education in a different challenges. It's not just all about sex, but it's, you know, Sex Education is about different characters in their teenage years, you know, and then this one is different characters in their teenage years facing different challenges. Is there comparison?
I haven't seen Sex Education. But it is, I've been told I've been told by a lot of people, actually, like 3 or 4 at least, that my series is the version for younger kids of Sex Education.
I see. Okay, got you. Right. And now I have to ask you, there's probably going to be, I went and Googled you a little bit, and you don't have your own Wikipedia page, but you do have quite a few fans that are writing stuff about you and asking lots of stuff about you and so on. Tell me about what it's like being better known now.
Well, it all, like, now I'm actually getting a bit more used to it, because it's been like almost a year and a half. But it, like, when the first season came out, it happened all in like 2 weeks. So it was like pretty shocking, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And it's still, like, still now, I find it amazing that just by responding to someone's message on Instagram, I can make their day. And, like, it's something so simple, but for them, it's, like, really cool. And, yeah, I really try to be make it not change me, because I hate, like, some people that just because, I don't know, they have this amount of followers, they treat people differently and stuff. And I always say that without my fans, I'm nothing. So every time I meet one of them on the street or they text me, I'm like, thank you so much. Because you say, oh, whoa, you're so cool. But without them, I'm not that. Like, I don't have the power they give me. They give me a lot of power.
Great. Do you ever get kind of messages about dyslexia from other young people?
I think I've got like maybe one, but it's really hard because you have like many people writing to you, and if you respond to someone, then like it goes all the way down on the list, so you can't get it back. And like, right. I think a message of a kid that said, oh, even I'm dyslexic, that's pretty cool. And I responded, oh, that's good. Well, then it means that you have to work harder, but you'll have cooler things. And yeah, and then the conversation got lost because you can like get them again.
So if you were, what kind of advice would you give younger people about dyslexia? You know, what would you say to them?
Well, I would definitely say that I still need to give myself advice, but for what I've learned is that, and I'm still trying to learn and still trying to use, it's hard, but I think to take away that mentality of saying, oh, I'm dyslexic, so I can't do this. Yeah. That I think is the worst. And I still do it. I still do it a lot. Like I use it as an excuse to myself also, but it's just something that you have to get over. Like, yeah, okay. Yeah. It's going to be a bit harder, but then you can do this thing better. Maybe a bit. Like for me, I want to get to start writing my insanely cool screenplays. But I have to get, like, I can start writing one now, but it won't be as good as I want it to because I still have, like, in my mind saying, you can't do it. So it's just this whole thing that, I don't know, you have to just not think, all right, it's an excuse. And as people say, it's a disability. You don't have to, if you think you have a disability, then you're bad. Like, you're not good. You just think differently. And yeah, in school, I guess you sort of do have a disability, but only because they teach it for other people. Like you say, it's only because they have the perfect shoes for them that fits perfectly and you have a really small shoe and it hurts a lot. So yeah, unfortunately now you're gonna have to run with that small shoe, but just know that when you make it to the finish line, you're gonna have all the shoes you want and more.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the finish line of after school because I think mostly dyslexia, it becomes a disability for you only in schools and academically. I think that's where it's the biggest disability because then it becomes an advantage. I don't think it should be a disability. Like, it's only a disability because they don't know how to teach you, I guess. And that's sort of my take on it.
Yes. I mean, the disability isn't with you. The disability is with the school is...
Yeah.
Doesn't have the ability to teach you the way you're thinking. So the school has a disability, not you. And that's my way of thinking about dyslexia. Dyslexia is a different ability that is harder for standard schools to teach. But if you know how to teach someone with dyslexia, give them the right tools, the right techniques to learn, they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And read. Yeah. They can read, they can write. They can spell, although spelling still stays hard. They can learn to drive. They can learn to write, you know, like with dyslexia.
Wait, it's harder to drive for dyslexic.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a really good driver.
Well, do you do stick shift?
No, I still don't have a car. But because in Italy, it's 18. Like, you have to be 18. But I tried I got my license in the States. Like, this summer, actually, I drove an automatic, but I passed, like, I studied for the test for, I don't know, 2 days before, and I got it, and I started driving immediately, and I think that actually driving for me is easier, because I'm dyslexic. I think I have, like, a surrounding, and also stick shift. I didn't know it was hard to drive if you're dyslexic, but yeah, about stick shift, I tried driving a stick shift, because I wanted to learn. And for the first real time I tried to drive it with stick shift, it took me like 30 minutes, but as soon as I understood like how it worked, I could do it.
So what's interesting about dyslexia, okay, is so dyslexia is a processing difference, okay? And one way I explain dyslexia to people is people say dyslexia is slow processing of phonological of sounds. Okay. Have you heard the phrase slow processing?
No, I haven't. Like now, okay. I've heard it, but not in this context.
So when a psychologist would explain dyslexia or dysgraphia or dyscalculia or dyspraxia, these are all expressing that you process that type of information differently. You process writing different text or writing or movement or maths differently. And what happens is that you are much more manual at it, okay, rather than automatic. And so it's like the difference between a manual car and automatic car. Imagine your brain's like a car, right?
Yeah.
And your teacher is teaching you how to drive your brain, okay? And the teacher's like, get in the car, put yourself into drive, start, put your foot on the gas, put your foot on the brake, gas, brake, turn, turn. And the kids are all going, yeah, okay, gas, brake, turn, you know? And then, but the kid with dyslexia is kind of like, right, put it into drive. And then I'm driving and I've stopped. I've stalled. What's gone wrong? Is there something wrong with my engine? And so on. And someone like me comes along and gets in the car and goes, oh, no, 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 there's nothing wrong with you. You're a manual. You're a manual car, stick shift. They're like, what's that mean? Oh, well, you've got an extra pedal on the side there. You've got gears, yeah. And you have to choose when to go in the gears.
Yeah.
And when you're going down the up a hill, you have to go down a gear. And then when this is happening, you slow down at traffic lights. You can't just slow down. You've got to go down the gears and then get into first gear and so on. And they're like, oh, right, okay. And when someone teaches someone with dyslexia manually processing how to read or how to write a story, this is all, you know how we were talking about being intentional about creating a story, intentional about editing it? That's because we are manual processors, not automatic processors.
Yeah. Well, that's actually interesting. And I actually didn't know that it was harder for a dyslexic person to drive a manual car.
Yeah, because what I've noticed that not for all of them, but it tends to be. I did a podcast interview with a lady and her dyslexia and driving. So people can get left and right wrong when they're driving with dyslexia because we can get our right and lefts wrong. And the instructor can say, oh, take a left. And you're like, oh, is it this left? And it can look like hesitation, but you're actually just processing which one's left. But it looks like you're hesitating on the road and the instructor goes, nope, that's a hesitation. And actually, if the instructor said, take a left like this, and you see the hand, you go, all right, no hesitation, I'll go that way. So she shares lots of tips on how to drive. But the key thing with the manual, here's what's the issue with driving. If any of you are listening and you're maybe 17, 18 years old and just learning to drive, is that the act of going through the gears and matching them to the road and so on, you can be thinking so much about the gears that you're not automatic at going through the gears. You haven't become smooth at it, that once you start going on the road and thinking about the roundabouts and looking left and indicating and all of that, you can start messing around with the gears and not quite go from third to second properly, or not quite go from second to third. And it can sort of, because you're not as automatic at it, you're much more manual at these processes, that you have to do it a lot more times until you become automatic. But once you've got it, you can be people with dyslexia like Jackie Stewart, very famous Scottish driver, racing driver, world champion, was dyslexic. Again, they get really good at it because they're very intentional at it. So if there's any specific sequence process, like going through gears, or a specific process that you've got to follow, often people with dyslexia have difficulty following that process in exactly the right way because they're bigger picture thinkers.
And then, about what you said about that dyslexics are more manual than automatic. At the beginning, to learn, it's slower to learn a manual. But when you learn a manual, it's faster than automatic. Like F1 cars are automatic. I mean, manual, sorry.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And it's a bit of a metaphor for people with dyslexia, for example. So a lot of people with dyslexia, if they become really good at their art,
that's what I'm saying.
Reading, writing, whatever, like the Formula One, they're like, I want a manual driver. But there's a lot of people just go on autopilot. And you'll probably find that with your acting. Because if you look at sports people and dyslexia, a lot of people with sports, a lot of dyslexics with sports are actually really hard to beat at their sport because they're not so predictable. They don't get into an automatic, oh, I always do it like this, or I always move this way. Because if you're a good sports person, you start to notice a pattern and you start anticipating it. But often people with dyslexia are kind of like, I can't remember the right order to do things. I just improvise all the time. And so it's so hard to predict what they're about to do next because they're always improvising in that way.
Yeah.
Well, Liam, it's been fantastic speaking to you. I really enjoyed this.
I did.
Is there anything that you wanted to share that you didn't cover in this? You know, because I know you really wanted to make sure that other young people, you know, heard the message about dyslexia and that you're on a journey yourself and mm-hmm. you're going to share more about that journey over the years to come. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, I think we've gone over quite a bit. And yeah.
We've had a very long conversation. I've really enjoyed it. It's been great.
Yeah, they actually passed pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing how your career progresses. I'm looking forward to watching Diary now. And I think you've got to watch. I don't know if you're allowed to watch Sex Education. I imagine you are. Of course you are.
Yeah, but, I'm going to watch.
Yeah, I think you'd like watching it. Well, Liam, it's been fantastic. I'm looking forward to hearing your career, like I said before. We're going to put in the show notes below all the links to everything Liam's mentioned, the Netflix show. You can just scroll down and click on it. And, you know, anything else, Liam, that you want to share? Yeah. How do people connect with you? You know, where should they follow you? Where do you like hanging out?
Definitely on my social media. So TikTok or Instagram, and it's just my name, Liam Nicolosi, and you'll find me.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll put that in there as well.
And also, when I finish this little film I'm doing, watch that.
Yeah, we'll put that up as well when you do it. When are you going to do that? Publish that?
I'm not sure. I'm in the editing process, and I want it to be pretty good. So, I don't know, like 1 week, 2 weeks, hopefully.
Well, Liam, it's been fantastic. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.